Hi, this is Leonard Peikoff here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. My responses cover subjects of general interest, such as human relationships, career, and morality, but not current politics. For the present, my answers are posted every other week on Mondays, and Dr. Yaron Brook answers questions on current events on the alternate Mondays. You can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes on my website. Several years of podcasts are now easily searchable by topic or keywords. If you have a philosophical question to ask, simply go to www.peikoff.com, and that's spelled P as in Peter, E-I-K-O-F-F, like the word off at the end, peikoff.com. And of course, feel free to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. I want to start this time with another example of the horror file, which this, of course, she didn't classify this herself. It's a recent fact, but is illustrating the kind of material that she found in the newspapers, in the media, that is so horrible and so explicit that people couldn't believe it. And nevertheless, she had predicted it on the grounds of what would it be to act consistently on this premise. Now, I have found one more. Unfortunately, it's recent, but I didn't copy down the name or the date. I believe it was Johns Hopkins. But there's no problem that you can find this on the computer. And this is, in essence, what happened. You can think of it in the context of my diatribes against transgendered people, which I have taken as a fight metaphysically against their own body, and in that sense, a fight against reality. They just insist that they are not what they are, and they have doctors who are prepared to abet them in wrecking their bodies and recreating them. But here is one which I think, believe it or not, is even more extreme. A young girl, in her teens, maybe 20s, grew up believing, although her vision was perfect, that she really was blind. She was intended to be blind by nature, just as these other people knew that though a woman, they were intended to be a man, etc. And she went, believe this or not, to a psychologist, a PhD, I think Johns Hopkins, but I'm not sure. And he agreed that she was not really a sighted person, although she could see perfectly. And he put her in his chair, put her head back, and carefully dropped, I think it was Lysol drops, into something like that, into each eye. She was grateful. Her vision was gone. And she said now she can't have a happy life. That, to me, is one of the most horrifying, self-mutilating examples I have ever heard, that the girl feels at odds with reality and feels that she's into herself when it's blotted out. And worse than that, much worse in my opinion than the girl, is the psychologist, with all his wonderful American graduate training, quietly and methodically blinding her. And no consequences, no cultural upset, nothing. What that says about United States education, no one could imagine a thing like that. If that happened even 10 years ago, I think, he would be in jail right away. And yes, I know that she wanted it. That does not justify him cooperating with that. If a person wants to be riddled with bullets and hang, off a fruit tree, tied to it until the blood comes out, that's her choice. But anybody who cooperates with that has to be treated as someone who shot her over and over and then hung her up. That's it. That's my view. And now a completely different question. Since the malevolent universe premise is false, malevolent universe is the view, for those of you who are new here, that it's impossible for human beings to achieve their values, rational values, in this world. It's just the world encourages destruction, failure, loss, and your attempts are destroyed by the nature of things. The good just can't survive in this world. Now, given that, he says, given that objectivism holds that that premise is wrong, what is it that makes the characterization of Dominique in the Fountainhead so enthralling? Shouldn't we just say she's a malevolent universe, irrational, given into, society, etc., etc., and find her boring? No, I certainly wouldn't think that, because Dominique is not just a malevolent universer. She is much more than that. She is malevolent to the extent that she thinks all values are threatened because they're values. That's why, she feels that Rourke is threatened. And on the other hand, she believes that it's crucial to achieve values. She doesn't just give up the possibility. She also is desperate to find values that can survive this world. And that's the whole importance of what Rourke taught her, that her values can survive in this world and that she mustn't give in to the other. And then at a certain point, she's able to free herself from that. But her essence until the late part of the book was she is a tortured idealist. She thinks there's no hope, but there must be hope because values are so crucial. And that's what makes her character so enthralling. I have to say, for what it's worth, I read this book as a teenager. Now, you can make of this what you want, but it's true. I identify with Dominique all the way through because that was exactly the way I felt. I was a tortured idealist just as she was. And it was only after I spent some time talking to Ayn Rand that I got rid of that kind of torture. And it took quite a while for me to stop reacting in those terms. For instance, I remember clearly Ayn Rand and I were getting in an elevator in New York to go down to the street, and I had my body situated in such a way that, if anybody tried to come in, they couldn't get through me. And she asked, why was I standing like that? I didn't think it was that obvious. She said, you're just like Dominique. She saw it just from that I was trying to protect her, because the very fact that she was such a value made her something that is threatened and that has to be protected. So I don't mean you should never protect a woman, but not from the motive that because she's such a great value, she's in trouble. She's in danger. Why do you think that most people do not dedicate the same time to understanding morality as they do to understanding the things in their life, like diet, exercise, their lawn, pet care, etc.? Well, I would say the answer is really simple. They don't think there's anything to learn about morality because they've been taught it by everyone from day one. So to them, it is self-evident that you should, serve others and contribute to the community and accept sacrifice. And then they throw in also the practical values that America brings into their lives, wealth, success, and so on. But if you said to them, well, why don't you study morality? Morality, to the vast majority, means religion. And it means something completely unlike what objectivists advocate. But since it's handed down as dogma from the church or the synagogues, there's nothing for them to investigate. To them, it's just obvious. And if you could find something and show them that they didn't know it, they would want to know, well, what makes this morality? And what would you answer? Well, we know this on the basis of objective knowledge, of observation of the world, etc. But they have been taught the whole worldview of God and his constant faith and so on. You would have to reorganize them philosophically completely. And they don't. Most people, through no fault of their own, have no idea that this is even possible. If they hear some person that goes outside the bounds of the conventional, they think he's a weirdo. He's, quote, an outlier, he's not in the mainstream, etc. There's very few that can hear, especially after, say, 17 or 18. Very few that can hear a philosophic idea that would challenge their whole way of thinking and, pay attention and try to decide, is it true or false? However, the good side of that is there's very few people that you have to convince, because since the majority, the vast majority, go along with the conventional trend, all you have to do is reach the small group, the minority, that is open to logic and evidence. And as long as we have that, we have what we need. Now, here's one. There seems to be a shift in the dim book, my book, in focus, a shift in focus from earlier chapters, where you look at the West's modal progression more broadly. Why did you decide to zero in on America? Does the West stand or fall with America? Yes, first of all, I would say. America is the rock on which the rest of the West is standing. It's not only the wealthiest, it's the one that most embodied or used to in its founding, in its reputation, embodied individual rights. You see today a foretaste, a foreshadowing. America is absent today, essentially, from the world. It's considered even by China and Russia as a joke. And what is happening to the rest of the world? Who is frightening the gangsters and the killers? So I certainly agree that if America falls, or if America is taken over by Islam or some corrupt sect instead, that will be the end of the entire West. That would be much worse in terms of the effects on the West than if Germany were taken over or France, etc. Those would be more localized. Another reason why I wanted to go zero in on America was selfish. I live in America. I wanted to know what would happen to America. I don't know, say, France or Denmark enough to be able to give that kind of prediction. And I know that everything depends on America. So that's what I brought the book to a close on. I have always wondered why Rourke seemed to sit passively and wait for commissions to come to him. Did Rand have a negative view? Did Rand have a negative view of marketing? In other words, he didn't go around and market himself. He didn't get an ad agency and so on. And was that, did that feed into, did she do that deliberately because she was against marketing? No, it's a much simpler answer to that. This is not a book about marketing. Now, let's suppose, for instance, that Rourke could have succeeded faster if he lived for 40 years on a rock somewhere. And you said, well, why didn't he do it and do sketches at that time? That's not the kind of life that she is portraying and that Rourke represents. And you have to take what a character does in the context of his purpose and the setting in terms of the book. One thing that she is illustrating, there's so many points here, but one thing that she is illustrating is that the opposition to Rourke is much greater than could be overcome by marketing. Now, perhaps later, when he's cracked the opposition to some extent, that would be possible. But the idea is that this is not a book about, here is a great art, and all we really need is a really good hard sell. That is not what the book is about. Otherwise, in We the Living, you'd have Kira, the heroine trying to escape, practicing escape all the time, as close as she could get, and how she would roll in the snow, etc. Why is the book not about that? Because that is not the book. It's not about the techniques of escape. And the same thing is true in this case. If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peakoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most important novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And I might add that it wouldn't hurt you to read my latest book, The Dim Hypothesis.